Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Coe back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
An insider's look at the National Football League. It's NFL Lunch, presented by Ruth's Chris Steakhouse, with Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan.
Time to feed you some football. It's NFL Lunch here on Vinny and Haney. Cordell Woodland filling in for Bob Haney here with Vinny Serrato. Quick draw McGraw behind the glass to see what's going on around the NFL. I just was on Twitter not too long ago, saw Tom Pelissero put out the note that the NFL is informing teams that the NFLPA vetoed the revised emergency third quarterback rule that would have allowed teams to elevate a bona fide quarterback from the practice squad an unlimited number of times. So the rule reverted to the 2023 version, which says the emergency third quarterback must be on the 53-man roster, not an elevation. So that I would imagine that's going to play into the Ravens 53-man roster situation right now as they're trying to finalize it. If they did, because last year they had Josh Johnson as their third, their emergency quarterback, and they were able to kind of he dressed, but he would be on the inactive list every week as the third quarterback. So right. I'm assuming this is saying he now counts towards that roster spot now instead of just being kind of this ghost player.
Now, why would the PA want that? I'm trying to figure, I guess. So the Ravens are only going to carry two.
Mm-hmm.
And that would mean that if Josh Johnson got in the game and he got hurt, you're hosed anyhow.
Right.
But then you got to bring that guy up to the 53 the next week. Mm. Is that what that kind of?
To be honest, it seems his work. I'm looking for somebody else that explains it more properly. But it does feel like, I guess what I'm getting out of this is no longer is that emergency quarterback kind of just a free spot. It's a spot that counts towards the roster spot on that day. So I would imagine even when it comes to the game day inactives,
right,
that third quarterback is probably going to have to be active, I would imagine.
Right. Oh, so he's going to be on your 47?
I'm thinking that that's the, because if that's not the change, what else is it really changing?
Yeah, I don't needs to be a little more detailed.
Yeah, I'm once I find somebody else that properly, goes a little more into detail, we'll pass that information along. Real quick, some Ravens news. Ravens practice is underway. The media is already on the field. Tyler Linderbaum, he's on the practice field. He is wearing a red non-contact jersey right now.
So they're in pads?
They are in shorts. So they're in shells right now.
Okay, so he's wearing non-contact, so kind of, yeah. And then Cordell, the Ravens practice today, then they don't practice again till Friday.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure it's probably a pretty good practice today because most of those guys hadn't done anything since last Thursday. So I'm guessing that today's like probably a 2.5-hour practice with a lot of stuff veered toward Kansas City.
Yeah, and as I'm reading here, I see Pro Football Talk has put out an article about it. The NFL owners approved a change to the emergency quarterback rule in March that would allow teams to call up a player from the practice squad an unlimited number of times to be on the inactive list as a third quarterback on game days, but that change will not be in effect this season. It says that with them vetoing that change, that means that the rule will stay the same way it was when it was adopted for last season. So I would imagine, so nothing changes from last season.
Right.
Yeah, so it's still the same.
You can't yo-yo them up and down unlimited
amount of time.
You get your limit of three elevations, then you either have to promote
them. So that's what it's saying. Got you. So it's actually a true practice squad elevation this time around, as opposed to it just being we're just calling them up every single game if we wanted to.
So the PA, what it does is it gives you more players. The PA is going to do anything that allows you to get more players or a guy to get paid. So that makes a little more sense.
Elsewhere in the NFL, Juju Smith-Schuster, he's going back to Kansas City, reuniting with that Chiefs team. Remember, he won a Super Bowl with the Chiefs a couple of years ago with Patrick Mahomes. And I think we saw last year, at least in the first part of the season, where they were still trying to figure out that receiving core, it felt like they missed Juju quite a bit. But it looks like Juju's going back to Kansas City. They have some question marks at receiver again with Hollywood Brown dealing with that shoulder injury, I should say. Rashee Rice may be facing a suspension here soon. So,
it doesn't sound... Well, Rice won't get suspended, Cordell. What I was reading is Rice won't get suspended because his case is still pending. And they can't suspend him until the case gets settled or goes to court. So he's going to be, and they may get a push back till next year.
Oh.
So it doesn't sound like Rice is going to be, like, it sounds like Rice is playing against the Ravens.
Yeah, that could be, you know, then it's just more, you know, more another weapon for Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes at that point. I don't know what Juju is given at this stage. We'll see. They're able to kind of squeeze whatever out of guys that they add.
Nice slot receiver.
Big body, reliable hands.
Yep, and they trust him.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're Juju, and I can go back to Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Oh, you're definitely doing that.
Yeah.
Definitely. Let's go out to Cleveland. Nick Chubb, remember his season was cut short last year. Season-ending injury. Had his MCL, meniscus, and his medial capsule all needed repair this offseason. He's still working his way back. He'll start the first four seasons of the game on the PUP list. No real surprise out in Cleveland when you talk to the people that cover that team out there. It does seem like he's been working his way back, but still a ways to go, it seems.
Yeah, so he'll be on the PUP list. He'll miss the first four games, and then they'll make a decision from there if it's going to be more time or not. I'm guessing that it'll probably be more time.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see what happens out there. But Nick Chubb obviously means a lot to that Cleveland offense. They were able to still make some magic happen as the year went on. Joe Flacco changed a lot of things in that offense last year, for sure.
Yeah, they were a passing team.
Mm-hmm.
And they threw it all the time. And, yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, they've got better receiving core now. So, Watson is... And I think they've tried to change the offense a little bit to more things that Watson can do, not Stefanski's offense, you know, this is what we're doing type thing. This is, you know, how do we make our $240 million man better and more comfortable?
Elsewhere in the NFL, we mentioned it earlier, we could see teams like the Ravens make trades here soon because of where they are in the waiver order. It may be guys that are going to get let go that they feel like they don't have a chance to get on the waiver. So they may try to make a trade for some of these guys. We saw the Jaguars and the Seahawks make a trade earlier today. Jaguars trading linebacker Travis Gibson to the Seahawks in exchange for a late round pick. So maybe we'll see a couple more trades before the end of the day. Looks like Sterling Shepard is being let go out in Tampa Bay. 31-year-old receiver who was really good for the Giants for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And he's battled injuries, it seems like, every year right now. So he wasn't able to stick out in Tampa Bay. We'll see if another team takes a shot on him. If he can stay healthy, who knows? But that's a long shot considering his injury history.
Well, here's the other thing, Cordell, is vested veterans. What's that, three years or more in the league? If you sign them, if they're on your roster before the first game, they're guaranteed their salary for the whole year. So what's going to happen is a lot of these vested veteran guys will not
right.
be on the roster originally, but they'll have deals in place where they're back after
handshake
week one.
Deals. Yep.
Which gives the Ravens kind of an advantage because your day after week one is that Friday, which everybody else hadn't even played yet.
More injury news. Let's go out to Tennessee. Head coach Brian Callahan letting the media know that linebacker Chance Campbell tore his ACL and he's out for the year. The Titans, man, it always feels like there's injury news coming out of Tennessee. They just always struggle to stay healthy to start the year. So we'll see what that means for them. I also saw some stuff from out in Dallas from Jerry Jones, and Jerry loves to talk. And
oh, yeah.
Jerry's talking about how nobody can do the GM job better than he can. And, you know, I'm giving you the G-rated version of what he had to say.
A lot of Fs in there.
Yeah. And look, my thing is, how do you know? How do you know? You've been running this team for forever, it feels like, and there hasn't been a lot of success. There's been, everybody talks about the Cowboys every year. Sure, you get a lot of TV buzz and the publicity. You're selling tickets and all of that good stuff. But it's not translating too much on the field. The Cowboys underachieve every year. So for Jerry to get up there and say nobody can run it the way that he does or as good as he does, I just think that's nonsense. How do you know? You do everything. You don't give anybody a chance to do anything else. You put your hand in everything. No other owner or GM talks to the media more than Jerry Jones does.
No.
So I just don't get it.
Well, really, when you look at it, Cordell, when they got all those Super Bowl, that was Jimmy Johnson's
right.
The one that.
Right. Well, don't
and
tell
Jerry
that.
Didn't like that.
Yeah, don't tell him that.
And that's why he ended up firing Jerry. Or Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and said that anybody could coach my team, and he brought in Barry Switzer.
Yep.
And they did win
they
one.
They did.
But they won one because they were...
Still the most talented team in football.
Well, that's like the year that Bill Walsh quit. I think it was like 87. And then he recommended George Seifert for the job because he thought George would screw it up, you know. But... The players were so mad and didn't like Bill that much. They were like, because Bill is, you know, with Bill, they won it because of Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And the players wanted to show that they would win it because of them. And they went out and killed that's when they won it back to back.
Right.
And I'm sure the Cowboys are probably similar situation. The Cowboys had phenomenal talent on that team. I mean, they were great at wide receiver. Their offensive line was spectacular. Mm-hmm. You know, the corners were okay. The linebackers were good. I mean, they had a Hall of Fame running back, Hall of Fame receiver, Hall of Fame quarterback, Hall of Fame old lineman,
yep.
Hall of Fame pass rusher. Deion was on that team, Hall of Famer. I mean, they were just better than everybody. The only way they would lose if they beat themselves.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll get back to the Ravens trying to figure out this 53-man roster. We talked about the offensive side earlier. Let's look at the defensive side of the ball. Who makes the cut? We'll talk about it next here.
Fantasy freaks and geeks. What's cracking? It's your boy, James Kell, back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week, and man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need. Season-long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here on The Fan, talk some Orioles baseball with her. Orioles to have the day off before taking on the Dodgers out in L.A. for the next 3 days. But, Vinny, we're looking at the Ravens defense right now, trying to figure out who's going to make the cut to 53. Let's start with the linebackers right now. And as I look at it,
I got 10.
10 linebackers. Who you got as your 10?
Roquan, Trenton Simpson, Malik Harrison, Chris Board, Adis Isaac, Josh Ross, Kyle Van Noy, Jabo, Tavius Robinson, and Owe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't really argue with that. I pretty much am in full agreeance there. looking at the DBs, and I think the DBs is the one that's the real question mark, because it's a lot of guys that they like there, and you can't keep everybody, and they've added to that secondary room this offseason.
I got 11, and okay. with Millett on short-term IR, so that would be 12 guys. But I got Wiggins and Armour Davis, Hamilton, Stevens, Pepe, Tampa, Kane, Washington, Marcus Williams, Eddie Jackson, and Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah, you know, one that's a little bit, I think, under the radar could be potential, and I don't know if he'll make the team, but I wouldn't be absolutely shocked if he snuck in on the back end, would be Kadar Holman, because he's been out there a lot for them on special teams. And that's going to kind of be the name of the game for a lot of these guys.
I thought he struggled in that Green Bay game.
Yeah, I mean, I thought a lot of them did, for sure. But he's just been consistently out there for them for special teams throughout the preseason. That kind of raised my eyebrow a little bit on him. I don't think defensively it's been a lot. He's flashed a couple of times in practice, but it's been a while. But yeah, I just thought his name may be worth mentioning because he's out there a lot for special teams.
Now, one thing, though, like in the Green Bay game, when they put the starting defense out, it was Jackson and Bo Braid. It wasn't Kane that was starting. So, you know, maybe that. But if it's even, they're taking the draft pick, I would think.
Right.
So I like we talked about Braid. I thought he got better every week. And I thought he got more aggressive and probably more confident, played a lot faster. Mm-hmm. I thought he played really well in the Green Bay game. I mean, from start to finish, yeah. He was making plays all over the place. So does he deserve it? You know, probably he and Kane are probably similar. It would come down to Chris Horton on who's going to help us more on teams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll definitely be the name of the game for some of these back of the roster spots that are up for grabs. Let's go to the defensive line. How many you got?
Five.
For there.
And it's pretty easy.
Yeah, Pierce, Matabike, Brody, Urban, and Jones.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, and Urban, we've seen them do the handshake deal with him, it feels like, every year. So it wouldn't shock me if they go that route again with him since he's a vested vet, but we'll see. But yeah, no real surprises along the defensive line. I'm still looking to see what type of personnel they kind of live in for the most part on defense. Are we going to see more dime? How much are we going to see multiple linebackers on the field? How much do they trust Trenton Simpson to be out there on some of those passing downs? They like him in pass coverage,
and he's played well.
Yeah, so and
he's better than Queen was at pass drops and in coverage and stuff. He's much better. But do they want to expose him in the Kansas City game? That'll be up to them, and because otherwise, I'm guessing they probably put Marlon on the inside and Wiggins on the outside.
Yeah, with Millett gone now. Yeah, just move Marlon inside and you still have Hamilton.
Hamilton's going to be everywhere. Mm-hmm. So that'll be interesting to see. And I could see them doing that. You know, Kansas City game, you know, you take out Simpson and you put Marlon on the inside and you keep Roquan in there and then Wiggins is on the outside. Wiggins has covered extremely well.
He has.
And when you're looking at the receivers, Worthy wouldn't be a problem for him because Worthy's not going to be a nifty route runner. And on the outside, Rice, pretty decent route runner. I mean, they would probably, they're going to go after Wiggins, you know, because I wouldn't trust, they're going to put Hamilton on Kelsey. Right. I mean, that's what they did. And Hamilton did a hell of a job, but Mahomes just made unbelievable throws.
Yeah. It's Mahomes and Kelsey. That's a crazy duo. But, yeah, I'm sure Kyle Hamilton is kind of licking his chops to get back out there and get another crack at that Chiefs team, just like I'm sure everybody on that Ravens team is that was out there on the field last year. Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll talk some Orioles baseball with Danielle Allentuck. The team is off today, but they're on their way out to L.A. to take on the Dodgers. Will the Orioles get some consistency in L.A.? We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Let's bring in Danielle Allentuck. She covers the Orioles for the Baltimore Banner. What's going on, Danielle?
Hi, guys.
How you doing? Not bad. We're not too bad over here. Beautiful day in Baltimore. Orioles, they got two out of the four in comeback fashion on Friday and Saturday. Dramatic for sure. Haven't been able to see a lot of the Orioles putting the rally caps on and coming back a lot this year, especially compared to last year. But we got some clutch hits, got the grand slam from Anthony Santander, got the bases clearing double from Jackson Holliday, and then they follow it up with a two-hit performance last night. I mean, how do you try to figure this offense out for the Orioles?
So I think that there were some good signs over the weekend. I think the fact that they were able to get the clutch hits in back-to-back games, and they had it on Sunday too. I mean, Ramon had that three-run homer that, you know, you could have been a clutch hit if it hadn't been for the bullpen. But so I thought those were all really good signs that they've made some progress there. But only getting two hits on Sunday was very concerning. Hyde kind of blamed it on Mountcastle and Mullins not being in the lineup, which is going to happen. You know, you're going to have guys who can't play every night. The more concerning thing to me was that, you know, Gunnar, Adley, Anthony, none of those guys had a hit on Sunday. So I think that they made some improvements, but still have a long way to go.
What are you seeing with Holliday? I mean, he had a big clutch hit, you know, when he pinch hit, but what was he, like 1 for 20 or 0 for 20, something like that, going into his pinch hit?
Yeah, he was 0 for 20 and didn't get a hit for 8 days, I believe, 8 games. And I think some of that is just going to come, you know, with the up and downs of being a 20-year-old in the majors. But I think it's more, what does he do from that? What does he learn from that stretch? You know, he was saying the other day that, you know, when he first got called up, he was trying so hard to get that first hit that it was like all consuming. And this time he was more relaxed and not overthinking it. And that he went too far in the other direction. So he really just needs to find a way to level himself out, get back to that middle ground between overthinking and not thinking, and just kind of play the game like he knows how.
Danielle, we got a pretty decent day from Dean Kramer yesterday. I mean, all in all, gave him a chance to win. And with Dean right now, I think a lot of us are kind of just taking what we can get more times than not. What do you think about Dean Kramer as the Orioles continue to make this playoff push?
I think Dean has been very consistent for them this month. In his past three starts, he's looked really good. Things did get out of control a little bit in that fourth inning, I believe it was yesterday. But besides that, I thought he was very strong. His command was great. His sweeper is looking really good. So he's a guy who gets better as the season goes along. And right now, he's just reliable for them. Now, you're going to get 5-6 innings out of him. He may give up a run or two, but right now, that's all he's allowing. So he has looked really good, and the Orioles cannot need that more right now.
Danielle, it seems like they're going to face a lot of left-handed pitching. Does it seem like that's been kind of an issue thus far?
It has, and their lineup against left-handed pitchers is just weaker, just by the nature of who they have. You know, right now, because of injuries, you know, they have to play some of these guys who aren't as good against left-handed pitching almost every night. You know, Jackson Holliday has to play, Gordon Calder has to play. So they're just not as strong there. They don't have the depth that they may have had last year against left-handed pitching. But it's the major leagues. So we're going to have to find a way to deal with it.
We're talking to Danielle Allentuck. She covers the Orioles for the Baltimore Banners. Vinny and Haney on 105.7 The Fan. And Danielle, with Corbin Burnes, it hasn't been the Cy Young version of Corbin Burnes here as of late, especially in his last two starts. What are you seeing with him? Is it a situation where maybe this is just a blip in a long season, or could he be a guy that may be wearing down as the season goes on?
Right now, it appears to just be a blimp. I always say, like, two starts is a blip, three starts is when you start to get concerned. So I think we'll learn a lot about him in his next start in the next couple of days. But you have to look at Corbin and kind of understand that he's a guy who has made every start this year. He went to the All-Star game. He had twins across the country that he goes back and forth to see all the time. So part of me wonders if, like, just the wear of the season is hitting him a little bit, and August is typically when you see that exhaustion start to kick in before, you know, the momentum of September kicks things back up. So I haven't seen anything overly concerning about him yet, but if this next start doesn't go well, then I think it's very fair to start raising questions about whether he needs to skip a start or maybe take a, not a phantom IL stint, but maybe just take a 15-day IL stint to get his body right, and then come back in time. But, yeah, they need him so badly right now.
Hey, Danielle, will we see Kimbrel closing at all this year, the rest of the year?
I have a feeling he will creep his way back into that role. Yes, they have not said that he's officially not their closer at any point. They have not said that Sir Anthony is their closer. Kimbrel has looked a little bit better his past couple outings. His control was there. But I would think that this time around, at least I would hope that the Orioles would be like, okay, we need like so many good outings from you. We need to see these signs before they trust him in that position again. So I don't think they're quite there yet. I wouldn't be surprised if he starts pitching really well, if he finds himself back in that closer position.
Danielle, we saw Albert Suarez, who I just really think has been a godsend for the Orioles this year. One of their most valuable players, considering all the hats he's had to wear and the type of situations he's been put in. Another solid outing from him on Saturday, giving him 4 2/3. Another really good pitching duel on Saturday that the Orioles were able to win. Haven't seen that a lot here often. But how big has Albert Suarez been for this team this year?
Albert has been incredible for them. To me, he's the AL Comeback Player of the Year. No question about it. I mean, to do what he's done after being away from the majors for 8 years is incredible. He is just getting better at 35. He is throwing harder than ever, and part of that is some of the technologies the Orioles have. They kind of realized he wasn't using his legs when he was pitching. So he's able to add a lot more power in. He's very consistent. He's very leveled. I was talking to a player the other day that he said that they see Albert as, like, the clubhouse dad. Like, he's just that guy who, on the field, you know what you're getting from him. Off the field, he's been such a clubhouse asset for them. So that he is one of their most underrated additions this year, and he's been just so key for them.
Now, Danielle, it seems like as of late they've been doing a better job with the guys trying to steal bases. I mean, maybe Rutschman's velocity has gotten better. Maybe he seems like he's healthier, or maybe the pitchers are helping them out a little bit more. What is the reason?
I think it's a combination. You know, Adley was a little banged up there with his back, and he was hit by the hand, which I think impacted him more than he'll ever admit. So I think part of it was that he was being slower. I think part of it was that you have a guy like Corbin Burnes, who makes a start every 5 days, who is just known for giving up a lot of base runners. So I think it's just kind of a combination of all the groups getting together and deciding we can't let this be as big of an issue as it has been. I still think that they're not great there, but there has been improvements over the past couple weeks.
Danielle, we know that the Orioles are dealing with a slew of injuries right now, especially on the infield. Jordan Westberg is out, an all-star, and Jorge Mateo's been out for a while, and I saw that, I guess, you guys were able to get word that it's still a work in progress for Mateo. He hasn't picked up on baseball activities just yet. He doesn't even know if he'll be back on the field this season for the Orioles. If he's not able to return, what type of situation are we looking at for the Orioles in this infield?
The last update was a bit of a tone shift, a little bit concerning. He may need surgery. They're still deciding over that. I am not clear yet on what the determining factor is there, on whether or not he's going to need the surgery. But yeah, he's not able to do anything right now, and we're almost to September, so doesn't give a lot of hope that he would be able to get back this year, but you never know. And if he's not, I mean, you're going to be looking at an infield that probably looks like it does now, because you don't know for sure if Westberg is going to be back in time. Mm-hmm. So you're going to have Jackson Holliday playing second almost every day. Third base is going to be Ramon. You know, Emmanuel Rivera just came up. He could be a guy. I wonder when rosters expand next week if Kobe Mayo is given another chance. So they don't have a ton of options anymore, but their lineup is just going to have to look like it is now without him.
Danielle, how does that lineup then and their pitching line up with the Yankees?
I think on paper, the Yankees do have a stronger lineup. At least they're playing yesterday like they are. But you never know. I mean, the Yankees have their own problems. They've had their own injury troubles. They have a closer who has also been very flimsy this season. So you just never know what's going to happen down the stretch in October.
Danielle, great stuff. Really appreciate your time this afternoon. How can people follow you and find your work?
Hey, you can find me on Twitter at @D_AllenTalk and on TheBaltimoreBanner.com.
Appreciate your time, Danielle. We'll talk again down the line.
Thanks, Danielle.
Thank you.
Coming up next here on Vinny and Haney, we'll wrap things up. Take one last trip to the Funhouse with Quick Draw before Inside Access takes over at 2. That's next here on The Fan.
Quick Draws, Funhouse. The Rudeness Tuneness Text Reader.
Who's the fastest gun alive?
This side of the Chesapeake.
I like that Quick Draw.
105.7 The Fan.
We'll start with Michael in Abingdon, who says he's not too worried about the Ravens O-line.
Ooh.
Says preseason is a vanilla scheme, unlike the regular season. The combo of Lamar and Derrick Henry will keep opponents on their toes, make up for some of the O-line shortcomings.
Well, there is O-line shortcomings, but eventually you got to do, man, like on short yards, what are you going to do? You're not going to trick them. At some point, you got to knock somebody off the ball. At some point, you got to get your body in front and be able to sustain a block or get your head across, you know, to cut off a block, those types of things. So, I mean, I have huge concerns going into the first game. You know, just because of what I've seen in the preseason, and they're not even playing against starters there. Whether it be vanilla or not vanilla, just as easy for the O-line then too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I've got to be convinced in a week from Thursday.
Yeah, I just think when it comes to football, a lot of people, it's easy for them to overlook the offensive line.
Yep.
You know, it's easy to just look past that and think, you know, if you've got good skill players, it'll make up for whatever the offensive line is lacking. And in some cases, that can be true. There are ways that the Ravens can get creative and use their great skill players to kind of, you know, make up for what the offensive line is lacking. But, yeah, it starts up front. You got to win the line of scrimmage. And if you can't, more times than not, you're not going to have success in football.
All right, well, let's look at 2019. Didn't they had three Pro Bowlers in the O-line, right, when they set the record for rushing yards? And, you know, and Lamar was a big part of that, a huge part of it. But you had some people up front up there doing good things. Otherwise, they're not going to get to the Pro Bowl.
Right. And the problem I have is that, you know, Lamar's pretty well into his career at this point. He's had seasons where he hasn't played behind the best O-line, and you've seen what it's done. 2021 stands out.
Yep.
The Villanueva year where he was holding down a tackle spot. I mean, O-line was, quite frankly, atrocious at times that year. And what happens? Lamar ends up getting hurt. A lot of people got hurt that year.
Yep.
But I'm not saying that that was a direct result. But, I mean, you have this big asset in Lamar, and they just seem to kind of overlook that part of the offseason where they just let guys walk, and their only notable addition was Rosengarten in the draft.
Now, let me ask you this. Do you think now, you know, because Lamar said he lost that weight to get quicker and everything, maybe he kind of figured, I got to be quicker
yeah,
and stuff this
there.
Year.
Got to get out of there.
Well, speaking of that, this texter here says Lamar at times can become a little indecisive or panicky when there's minimal pressure. I think this year could be pretty rough behind the O-line, except for Derrick Henry. Very happy to have him. And thankful that they have someone they can hand the ball off to 15, 20 times a game. That is, if the coordinators aren't foolish.
I think Lamar's been much better at camp. I think the fans are going to see a different Lamar this season. I think they'll see a more calm, poised guy because he's got to be. He's basically the assistant offensive coordinator, or at times he's the offensive coordinator because it's up to him to what plays that he's going to call. So I think that he has studied a lot more. I think he's a much more confident guy in game plans and stuff because he's heavily involved in them.
And it is going to be important for him to be able to trust that the guys in front of him can do their job.
No doubt.
Because if not, then yeah, you will get the Lamar that's feels like he's got to get out of the pocket as soon as the ball is snapped.
Like with Ronnie last year. Ronnie was awful. He couldn't block Norm.
This one here, real quick, on Jerry Jones, his comments earlier about being best equipped for that job. This texter says, Jerry Jones is, in fact, the best in the league at his job. He doesn't even win Super Bowls, still makes the most money. How can he not be the best?
True. When you look at it that way, I mean, he can't get fired. He's positioned it to where he can't fire himself. So, yeah, I mean, Jerry is he's playing chess while we're playing checkers, obviously. You know, even you can't be the worst GM in the league and also be an owner. So I think there are good qualities to Jerry. There are things that I do like about Jerry Jones, believe it or not. But I don't think that he knows exactly what he, I think he just leads the team with his heart a little too much at times. And he plays these games in the media. And in his mind, as long as you're talking about the Cowboys, then he's doing something right. I don't know. I think it's going to come back to bite him at some point, and especially now when you've got two high-profile guys looking for contract extensions. Everything he says in front of the mic, in front of these cameras, they're seeing it, and you just got to play this game correctly. This is the time to lay low, but Jerry doesn't know how to do that.
Well, you know what's crazy is most times the coaches kind of set the tone. I mean, Harbs is the face of the franchise, and he sets the tone. And if you listen to any of his coaches, they all talk the same way. They're all positive, no negative about anything. Whereas Jerry, man, Jerry, for the coaches, that's hard. McCarthy makes your job even that much harder.
Yeah, most GMs or owners, you hear from them once a year.
Elias, we hear from with injuries.
Sure. You hear from Jerry once or twice a week.
Well, yeah. Well, he does
after
a radio show. He does a radio show, and he does after. The media, they don't go to the press conference to see the coach. They go to see Jerry.
Yep.
All right, we'll close with this on the Orioles. Texter says, the feeling coming out of this weekend is average at best. The two wins, far from decisive. Meanwhile, the Astros' two wins that they got were decisive. Orioles still searching for that statement win.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It is good to, in some aspects, I get what the texter is saying. I did like to see them come up with some clutch at-bats. And like Danielle said, Ramon did give them one yesterday as well with that three-run shot, but nothing else offensively to speak of. So it was good to see them get a hit when they needed it. But yeah, you got to see these guys play a full nine innings, and it just feels like it's been a while since we've seen that, especially against a really good team. That'll do it for us. Another great one in the books. Appreciate you guys for tuning in for the last 4 hours. Don't touch that dial. Inside Access, they're up next. Until next time, class is missed.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's cracking? It's your boy James Kell back with my brand new project, the Sleeper King Football Podcast. Look, I get it, okay? There's a lot of fantasy pods out there, but we're going to keep this one light, 15 to 20 minutes, 4 to 5 times a week. And man, we are going to pack it with all the info you need, season long, weekly projections, and of course, sleepers, sleepers, sleepers. Follow and listen to the Sleeper King Football Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.